Hello and welcome to the Rembrandt Parables podcast. What happens when Rembrandt is given the opportunity to run the restaurant his way? He quickly learns there's more to being a supervisor than meets the eye. This is Tim Cooper. Please join me as we discover what happens when Rembrandt runs the restaurant. With a name like Rembrandt, it's no wonder he suffered through his childhood at the creative impulses of other children. He was called everything from Remy to Remington Steele. One friend always referred to him as R.E.M. "Hey, R.E.M.," he'd ask, "you still losing your religion?" It was enough to drive him crazy. When he was 7 years old, he asked his parents why they'd given him such a name. "Because you're our masterpiece," replied his mum with a comforting smile. "Yeah," his dad chimed in, "and Picasso sounded kind of dumb." Over the years, Rembrandt became used to the comments. Instead of despising his name, he grew to appreciate it. It's distinct. Never had he met anyone with whom he had to share. Wherever he went, he was the one and only Rembrandt. That does not mean to say people didn't play on its uniqueness. There were the times, as he served a coffee and donut, that a customer would ask, "Is that a masterpiece?" Rembrandt learned to laugh it off as a good-natured tease. There was that one regular customer, Duane, who unfailingly referred to Rembrandt as the toothpaste guy. One day, Duane came in as Rembrandt worked the till and Herbie served up the coffee. After picking up his large regular, Duane nodded back at Rembrandt and said, "Keep 'em white, toothpaste man." "Will do, ordinary citizen," Rembrandt said while making his best Superman pose. Later on, Herbie approached Rembrandt. "Does it bug you when other people make fun of your name?" "Nah," said Rembrandt, "it's all in fun." "There are some of those in my family, eh?" Herbie said. "You know that verse in Proverbs 7:4? Say to wisdom, you are my sister, and call understanding your nearest kin," Herbie said, nodding approvingly. "You have a sister named Wisdom?" Rembrandt asked. "Yep," Herbie said with a smile. "In high school, she ran track. She was the fastest girl in the area. My dad used to go around tell folk that Wisdom runs in the family." "Really?" said Rembrandt. He sensed that Herbie was picking up steam. "And I have a cousin back home, too," he said with a building enthusiasm. "You know what they call her? Understanding. Or Stan, for short. She's a real beauty, Stan is. She got married a few years back, like a royal wedding, too. She married a feller named Joe Fellow." When the pastor announced the couple at the end of the ceremony, he proudly announced, "May I present to you Joe and Understanding Fellow." "Right," said Rembrandt. "It was glorious, I tell you," Herbie said with a reflective gaze, as though he was living the pageantry all over again. Butch snuck up on the two of them. Rembrandt noticed him first and offered an embarrassed glance. Herbie was still back in Newfoundland and didn't first notice his supervisor's disapproval. "Excuse me," said Butch. "Don't you have something to do?" Herbie snapped back to the present. "Sorry, Skipper," he said, as he instinctively started wiping down the counter. Butch ran a tight ship. He encouraged cordiality with customers because strong relationships, he believed, make loyal customers. He wanted his staff to get along, but he frowned on too much goofing off amongst the staff. "If a joke is good enough for a co-worker, it's good enough for a customer," he'd often say. Butch believed if the staff look like they're having too much fun with each other, it gives the impression they were lax in their responsibilities. And Butch was never lax in his duties. He understood that this job represented his future. Lacking the education of others, hard work and tenacity were his greatest assets. To the employees with degrees, like Rembrandt and Doreen, Butch appeared fastidious and unyielding. Doreen secretly referred to him as the great TD, the tattooed dictator. But that was only after Butch annoyed her by making her clean, a job that was usually assigned to Myrtle. Myrtle was a woman in her late 40s. She was married to a postal worker and had two teenage children. She started working at the restaurant just over a year ago to help carry the financial burden of the family. This was the first job she ever had. Generally, she was a shy, diminutive woman who barely seemed equipped to work in the fast-paced restaurant like Morton's Coffee Pub. She was the type of woman that went on a cleaning spree every time she was upset. Rembrandt was convinced that Butch egged her on every time he wanted her to clean the display cases or degrease the donut fryer. He would call Myrtle back for a chat, and before you knew it, Myrtle would be scrubbing glass of the sneeze guard to a crystal clarity while muttering to herself as she worked. Rembrandt didn't think it was fair that Butch treated her that way. He thought it wasn't fair that Myrtle be forced to do most of the unsavory jobs of the restaurant. It wasn't fair that Butch never rotated his staff, allowing everyone the opportunity to learn the whole business. Secretly, Rembrandt hoped to right the wrongs of his supervisor. One morning, Butch called Rembrandt into the office at the back of the restaurant. Rembrandt generally dreaded these meetings. His first instinct was to assume that he was in some sort of trouble. He had no idea. "Close the door," Butch said. Rembrandt turned and saw Doreen as he slid the door shut. She looked as confused as he felt. "I'm going on vacation next week," he said. "Oh," said Rembrandt. "Are you going to Puerto Vallarta?" "Camping," said Butch. "In the Muskokas with some friends." He looked less than enthusiastic. "Have you ever been camping?" asked Rembrandt. "No," said Butch. "My friends talked me into it." "Are they taking you snipe hunting?" Rembrandt asked with a poorly suppressed smile. Butch's face married into a combination of surprise and suspicion. "How did you know?" he asked. "Oh," stammered Rembrandt. "I heard it's popular up there, and safe, no guns." He nodded his head approvingly. "Right," said Butch suspiciously. "Anyway, I'll be gone all next week, so you're in charge." The words floated across the room like a beautiful aroma. Butch savored the moment, hoping to record each detail for future reminiscence. Butch kept speaking about not rocking the boat and maintaining the status quo. There were also a few words of warning about not fixing what isn't broken. But Rembrandt heard none of those things. All he remembered was that he was in charge. It was a golden opportunity to right the wrongs of perceived injustices. The Morton's Coffee Pub would finally become a beacon of equality as the grip of tyranny would finally be loosened, where the Myrtles of the world would experience the hope of a better workplace. Rembrandt sighed a long, self-satisfied sigh as he basked in the utopian world that drifted across his imagination. "Rembrandt, is that all right with you?" said Butch, shocking Rembrandt back to the office. "Right," said Rembrandt, not really knowing what he'd just agreed to. "I'm leaving a list of things to do. The top ones are things that have to get done. Myrtle can handle those. The others are only if you have time, okay?" "Oh, absolutely. We'll hold down the fort," said Rembrandt with a giddy grin. "Just make sure you bring me back some snipe. I hear they're good eating." Butch glared in response. Rembrandt burst into the restaurant Monday morning with the enthusiasm and purpose of a revolutionary. This was the first day of the new order. Already he felt like a conquering hero. He stood in the doorway and took a long, slow breath. He wanted to savor the moment. An unwitting Doreen became the first victim of his enthusiasm. She had a habit of coming in early. This was a throwback to her student days when she tried to impress her professors with feigned eagerness. Being the first to arrive to class or lab never held the sort of unfortunate consequences that this morning would bring. "Good morning, Dor," Rembrandt said in a chipper tone that Doreen found unnerving. "I've got an idea. Let's try something different today." "Let's not," said Doreen. She turned and went to the back of the restaurant, hoping Rembrandt wouldn't follow. "Wait, listen," said Rembrandt. "This is good." "If you have to preface this by saying it's good, it isn't," she replied. "No, stop for a second," Rembrandt persisted. "Today, let's mix things up. Herbie'll work the drive-through. Myrtle will be on the front cash with me, and everyone else will be support." He nodded approvingly. "What'll I do?" asked Dorian suspiciously. "That's the best part. You can clean the tile baseboard around the restaurant." Rembrandt kept nodding, hoping to entice her into agreement. Not the bathrooms, just, you know, the restaurant. By the time Myrtle had arrived and plugged into the conversation, Herbie had been eavesdropping around the corner. "No!" boomed all three at once. It shook Rembrandt like a stereo of complaints. "The change of revolution is never easy," he thought Rembrandt. Their resistance only solidified his resolve. "This is what we're going to do. It's about time we learned each other's job. That's how other stores run, you know. It's fair." Rembrandt's determination paid off. The others grumbled but accepted their assignments. Pleased with himself, Rembrandt went to the office and sat behind the desk. He heard Doreen mumble, "Myrtle, where are the cleaning supplies?" "Okay. I can't wait till Butch gets back." The pace of the morning picked up quickly. The way people approach their Monday morning coffee, you might think Morton's Coffee Pub is a service like the hospital. The only observable difference between the two is that people care more about the wait time on their coffee. To satisfy the caffeine challenged, it is imperative that everything runs smoothly behind the counter. On the Monday morning, the masses were particularly restless. It had rained all weekend, and the forecast called for rain all week. Rembrandt suppressed the nagging thought that this may not be the best day to revolutionize the restaurant. Things started to fall apart at the drive-thru. Rembrandt hadn't considered that customers would have trouble understanding a thick, newfie accent through the drive-thru speaker. "Tanks, drive-thru, eh?" said Herbie. "True? Pardon? Did you say true?" came a confused voice on the other end. "I said tanks, drive-thru," repeated Herbie. "Do you think I'm lying? What do you mean, tanks? Look, I just want my order." "Nah, just come in here and I'll give you your order," snapped Herbie. "What? Other what? Oh, forget it. I'm driving up," replied the frustrated customer. The truth was, Herbie really didn't understand the customers either. When he was 12, he blew an eardrum in a schoolyard scrap. In order to compensate, Herbie learned how to read lips. He'd become such an accomplished lip reader that he appeared to have extraordinary hearing. Herbie had explained his condition to Butch when he was hired at the restaurant. That's why, for all the years Herbie worked for Butch, he was never assigned to the drive-thru. And for the sake of discretion, Butch never mentioned Herbie's condition to anyone else. Rembrandt had no idea he'd placed a half-deaf man on drive-thru. Myrtle was already uneasy working the cash. Since her orientation a year ago, she'd served customers only once. That was when her husband and kids made a special trip from Stony Creek to visit her. The rest of the time, she was a cleaning specialist. Most people didn't know how much people intimidated her. Cleaning, on the other hand, was her passion. She watched How Clean Is Your House just for the cleaning tips. She researched it on the internet. Myrtle even wrote an article for Good Housekeeping magazine on the cleaning benefits of tea tree oil. It was published under an assumed name. Serving customers was unnerving. Facing angry customers from the drive-thru was more than she could take. Rembrandt tried to relieve the pressure, but there were too many for either one to handle alone. The stress was pasted across her face. Despite the chaos, things held together until Doreen came out to clean the tile floor. When it came to cleaning, Doreen was the anti-Myrtle. She was like a fish in the desert, completely out of her element. Doreen placed her half-empty coffee on the counter between the sink and the coffee makers. It was a drink of her own design, a large triple cream with 4 sugars and 2 shots of hazelnut flavoring. If it was left too long to cool, the sugars would begin to recrystallize and turn the whole thing into a gooey syrup. To identify it as hers, she wrote a DD on the lid for Doreen's drink. To this point in her Morton's career, Doreen had never entered the cleaning closet. It was a confusing mixture of chemical odors and equipment so encrusted with dirt, she was convinced it was impossible it could make anything clean. She fumbled around with a pail and a cleaner called Dirt Declog that she figured would do the trick. Cleaners are cleaners, she told herself. Armed with yellow dishwashing gloves, she carried her supplies into the restaurant. Despite the noise and palpable tension of everyone else, she focused on the task at hand. If this was what Rembrandt wanted, this was what he'd get. Doreen began by pouring dirt declog directly onto the tiles around the customer's counter. Had she read the label, she would have learned that this was an extra heavy-duty drain cleaner. Butch bought it especially from a plumbing supply store to clean out the greasy drains in the kitchen and the dish room. Doreen would have read that it should never be applied to finished surfaces, that dirt declog can dissolve bonding agents like grout. Doreen didn't notice the first loose tile. She only became aware something was wrong when the floor seemed to shift under her feet. That was the same moment when Myrtle, now completely flustered by the waves of complaints, mistook Doreen's now tepid coffee as a double-double and gave it to a particularly disgruntled customer. It was when the customer zipped past Doreen and thoughtlessly took a sip of the hazelnut-flavored syrup in her half-empty cup that she whirled around on one foot in a fury, but kept right on sliding on the loose floor tiles and crashed into the trophy case. Rembrandt watched his store fall apart around him. Doreen fell on top of the customer in a vain attempt to help her up. Myrtle, now in tears, sobbed in front of the growing crowd of angry customers. The support staff had arrived, but were overwhelmed by the chaos. Only Herbie wore a smile. He was oblivious to the rest of the store. At a lull in the drive-thru, he came up beside Rembrandt and surveyed the situation. Rembrandt was too mortified to speak. Herbie slapped him on the back and said, "Just like herding cats, eh?" Rembrandt's revolution was overthrown. The following Monday, Rembrandt found Butch sitting at the desk in the office. Butch wore a scowl as he looked over the week's schedule. "I hate camping," said Butch. "What?" said Rembrandt, a little surprised. "Why?" "My idiot friends. They took me camping. Like, not even outhouses. It was more like third bush on the left." He was now shifting uncontrollably in his chair. "Oh," said Rembrandt. "What did you do?" Butch looked up at Rembrandt for the first time. He was still scowling. "I did what they told me to do. I used leaves. You know, what was available. I improvised. There were a bunch of three-leaved plants, you know, in arm's reach. I thought, great." "Three leaves?" Rembrandt thought for a moment. "Isn't that..." Butch finished his sentence. "Poison ivy." Rembrandt laughed out loud. Butch just glared. "You laugh awfully hard for someone who almost destroyed the restaurant," he said. The two stared at each other, sharing in their mutual humiliation. "You know," said Butch, "you had good people, and they know their roles." "But Myrtle," objected Rembrandt. "Myrtle lives to clean. I don't know why she does, but it's her gift. You can't expect her to jump into something she can't do. Herbie just needs to stay where he is. And don't ever let Doreen near the cleaning supplies again. Her gift is drive-through, loud voice and all. I don't know why God made it that way, but it is what it is." Rembrandt sighed and wallowed in his failure. "This time," continued Butch, "just let them do what they're good at." Butch stood up and tugged at the back of his pants. Rembrandt looked up suddenly. "This time?" he asked. "Yeah, I gotta go. I need calamine lotion real bad," he said. Rembrandt watched as Butch waddled out the door. Doreen poked her head in the office. "Where's Butch?" "He went home. He's sick," said Rembrandt. Doreen rolled her eyes. "So let me guess, you're in charge?" "Yep," said Rembrandt, raising an eyebrow. "It's my gift." That's the end of Rembrandt Runs the Restaurant. I would like to thank you for joining me today and sharing in this podcast. If you have enjoyed this, I hope that you will join us again for another tale of the Rembrandt Parables. Have a good day, and may God bless.